Blog Talk Radio. I am great, not because someone told me, but because I believe. I believe in my abilities to achieve the impossible. I am strong beyond measure. I am smart without a doubt. High I will aim. Shout loudly I proclaim that I am great. I am great from my inner core. Deeply I believe that no obstacle is too large, too much to overcome. I am a conqueror. Opposition I will slay. For this is the day I say that I am great. I am great. I know who I am. I stand tall and erect. Nothing intimidates me. From the moment I begin, I win. I am defined by greatness and nothing less. My only option is success. Action proves it best that I am great. Hello, and welcome to another edition of the Make It Great Show with your host, Phenicia Hubbard, and co-hosts Beverly Rogers and Candace Cole. This is the Uplift Connection, where you hear inspirational stories from uplifting women who are choosing to make it great in their lives. For a listing of upcoming guests and topics, visit us online at Phenicia.com.
Hello and happy Sunday. Welcome to another edition of the Make It Great Show. So glad to have you with us today. The Make It Great Show is what we bring to you every Sunday. We come to you live, unscripted, unedited, and uncut. And this is a place where you come to get food for your mind, fuel for your soul. What we do here on this show is discuss topics that are around growth and development, and we try our best to really just keep it real. We love to chat with women in the community who are also out there making it great, and I'm so excited because today we have another special sister with us in the studio. My name is Phenicia Hubbard. I'm your Make It Great coach, and I'm so glad to have you here today. Those of you listening live online, thanks for tuning in at blogtalkradio.com/makeitgreat. And for those of you listening that want to call in, you can reach us at 347-327-9281. Want to remind you all about our website. We have a new updated website, and you can check us out at makeitgreat.phenicia.com. And when you go to that site, you'll see not only information about the show, but you'll also see a listing of all of the guests that we've had online. You'll get a chance to listen to some past episodes and also opportunities for you to support our show as well as to reach out to us. Some women that have been on the show to date include Afua Brakwa, came on and talked with us about just really living a balanced life. Afua is a teacher in Chicago, and she talked to us about what she does to keep her life balanced. We also had the opportunity to talk with Carol Miller of Positive Focus, who is out there really just spreading positivity in a very innovative way, not only in Chicago, but nationwide. We've spoken with Sharonda Chrome, who is definitely a field guide for your soul. She's a spiritual coach. And we spoke with Glennis Clarice, who is an author and the founder of the Miss Be More community. So, again, we're all about bringing on people who are out there making it great and impacting the world with their special imprint. Most recently, we had Charlene Reinhardt on right before her competition. That's Miss Writing Chicago International. We spoke with her. And last week, we had a chance to talk with Marilyn Bergstrom about tapping and the emotional freedom technique. So when you come to this show, not only do you get uplifted and inspired, but you also get some good knowledge. Today, I'm excited because we have Tamar Cloyd on the line in the studio. And Tamar, let me tell you a little bit about her. She is a sister that I actually went to junior high and high school with. And Tamar was older than me. So, you know, when you're the younger one in a high school setting, you tend to look up to the other classes. So I definitely looked up to Tamar's class and to Tamar in particular because she embodied to me, in my young 14, 15, 16-year-old eyes, she embodied freedom of expression. And I love that about Tamar. We managed to reconnect after we both had finished college. I think we reconnected online, and we've been in touch ever since. Now, today, we want to take some time and just talk to Tamar about her journey, about her life, and about what she does to make it great, give you all a little bit of information about her and also her website so you can check her out. Tamar helps, here's what she does. Her tagline, which I love, is she's raising dollars for change. Tamar works as a freelance writer and a fundraiser. And so what she does is work within the nonprofit sector, and she does fundraising, program management, communications, all about helping organizations grow and to really reach out and gain additional funds for their mission and their cause. She has a blog online called Fund Times, and that's F-U-N-D, Fun Times, and it's on WordPress. So it's funtimes.wordpress.com, and then you can also check her out. She's got her own personal website, but I'll have her give that information when she comes on. So this is a sister who stepped out a couple of years ago to really dance in her passion, and definitely want to hear her talk about that, about what that journey was like to really step out and do what it is you love to do. Tamar was born and raised in Chicago, and now she's out on the East Coast, so I'm glad to have her in the studio today. So let's go ahead and bring Tamar on. Tamar, welcome to the Make It Great Show. Really glad to have you here today. Can you tell me what you're celebrating right now out on the East Coast and in your life?
Hey, thank you, Phanisha, for having me on. I really, really appreciate it. Right now, I'm just celebrating, you know, like we said when we first got online, we were talking amongst ourselves. Is like you said it best. Is just celebrating being alive. I mean, you know, life is it's not promised, and things. So much stuff is happening in the world now. So much turmoil, and so to kind of wake up and be here is an accomplishment and something to be celebrated in and of itself. So that's what I'm doing today. Is just, you know, taking time and just really appreciate all the blessings I have in my life, especially my family. So
I love that, and I love it because you kind of say that on your website on Fun Times. There's a tagline where you say that there's no time like the present.
Exactly.
Pun intended.
That's right, right, right.
So I love it.
Right.
Yeah. So okay, Tamar, I want to start. Let's backtrack in time, because what I want us to do is give people an opportunity to learn about your journey of stepping out into Fun Times and what that was like. But I want to back up to who you are and what led up to this point in your life. Now, I remember you as a young girl who had no problem with speaking her mind and expressing herself the way she felt comfortable doing in the world, whether that was through her clothes, whether that was through what she said. Let's go back to who that girl was and tell us a little bit about her and what life was like for her back then.
Yeah, sure. So, you know, growing up, I knew I was different, but it wasn't a big deal. So my father, I can just sort of point to my father. My father was a, very encouraging person. He was always encouraging us to just do our best. And so my brother and I, so growing up, you know, I was, you know, mostly raised by my father and my grandmother, and my dad would, you know, expose us to all kind of different things. And I think that because there were no strict boundaries on how we should be. I mean, obviously he didn't encourage us to be criminals, but I mean, he was sort of like, you know, as long as you know, do your best, I'm behind you. And I think that statement allowed both my brother and I to sort of do the things that we love to do. And so, you know, when we met, I was, you know, junior high, high school. That's the awkward stage. We all know that. And so I was lucky to, you know, to have other sisters around me who embraced that, and it wasn't a big deal. So I always had a group of people that I connected with through, you know, our love of music, especially music. I think music is another thing about me that helped me to really hone in my creativity. So I love music. I listen to, you know, from from metal. I go from metal to like hip hop in a minute, and it wouldn't be a big deal. So I think that just having these different avenues to explore just allowed me to stay in this creative realm. So, you know, so when I got to, you know, to high school, again, I was just constantly nurtured to just be, to try different things. So, so once I was through with high school, I went to Michigan State for college. And again, you know, sort of the same thing happened. I still did my thing. I went to class, I studied, I purposely took classes that interested me. So I took, you know, classes on occult, for example, which, you know, people really wouldn't choose it as a topic, but I just, you know, took classes on that and was constantly seeking wisdom on different type of things. So I think that, again, that helps to hone my creativity. I was never one to just say, well, you know, I'm a black girl from Chicago, so I'm going to be this way. I just kind of went with whatever interests me, and I think that that's kind of shaped who I am today. And as a mother now, I see my sons. I have three boys now, but I see, you know, my oldest and my middle son just doing that thing, being really creative, and exposing them to different things, different kinds of food, so that when they get older, they're not, you know, like, oh, I'm not going to eat that. What is that? You know, so sort of passing the torch with them. But I think just to reiterate is that I've always kind of been in an environment that encouraged me to be myself, and you know, that really helped.
Yeah, I can definitely pick that up about you. And you mentioned mm-hmm. creativity a lot. So
what
does creativity, like, what does that mean to you, and what does it look like? Because I think some people, when you say creativity, they get an image in their mind of what they think that is.
Mm-hmm.
What is it to you?
I mean, creativity is just, you know, sort of forming your own idea of who you are. I mean, and that's something that everybody has. I mean, everybody has a choice on who they're going to be. Ultimately, I mean, you have some things that you necessarily can't control, like, you know, the environment you grew up in, or the way you look. I mean, some stuff you really, I mean, I guess you could change your looks, but that's another conversation. But there's some things that you sort of are born into, but then you have another part of you that, you know, is free to just do whatever, essentially. And I think that that's creativity. I mean, some folks are afraid to really embrace embrace their power to sort of craft themselves. So they might say, "What I would love to do, like for example, Panisha, I cut my hair again recently, so I'm bald again. I mean, I have a really low cut, and so a lot of folks see me and they say, oh, you know, you look so nice. I could never do that because of, you know, I think I have a big head, or, well, you know, anything they said to me, you know. But that's not a big deal. Like, for me, it's not a big deal. I mean, it's hair, it's not a big deal. And I think that fear limits people's creativity, meaning limits people's opportunities to go to the next level, to sort of evolve within themselves and do more. And just really, like I said earlier, life is short. I mean, as long as you're not out there, for the most part, you know, harming other people, I mean, really, like, what's stopping you? And I would say that it's fear. Fear limits people's creativity. And, you know, I hear a lot of people as they get older, they have regrets. I wish I would have done blah, blah, blah. But no, like, there's no getting old. The time is now. Like, there's no more playing around. You know, if you want to do something, there really is nothing stopping you but yourself. So.
Tell the truth. I love that. And when I think about fear, I think the opposite, on the opposite spectrum of that is mm-hmm. love. And it sounds like so much of that love and encouragement came from your father, you know, instilling that confidence in you to make choices that were in alignment with who you were. Yeah. What was that relationship like with your father?
Yeah, my daddy was like, oh, he was, you know, he was definitely my rock. I mean, he was always, like I said, you know, by our side, encouraging us to reach and to do different things. And I think that he was our, you know, he allowed us to grow in a safe environment. So by him encouraging our decisions, and, you know, even if we made a mistake, him not, like, condemning us totally, that was good. I mean, because we all make mistakes, and even as we get older, we continue to make mistakes. But having somebody around you to say, you know what, you did wrong, you know, but get back up and do this, that allows you to have a safe space to explore more. But he was definitely, I mean, my father was a hard worker. He he finished a little bit of college, you know, but he was just smart, like naturally smart. We used to go to, Tanisha, we used to go to Powell's bookstore in High Park and sit on the floor for hours, like in his dusty bookstore, like looking at all kind of random books, and that fed my creativity too, because I'm like, oh, my daddy's reading the Bible. Like, he was studying the Bible too. He would either be sitting reading the Bible or reading all these different history books, and so that piqued my curiosity even more. I'm like, wow, I don't know, what you reading, Dad? You know, he would show me and share different things with me, and so because I saw him doing it, I wanted to do it. So that was the part that he played in shaping who I am today.
That is such a great model for to set for young people. And so as I listen to you, I'm hearing you talk more about like this real life education that you have developed for yourself. You know, we can think about school and we can think about academic excellence where you're striving to get good grades and you're picking the right major. And then you can think about education, which is like that real, like, learning. And so just the fact that you steered off from your major to take classes in the occult, like, who does that? You know, you had the courage to do it. And then to have a father that just models reading for you and you're sitting down and just having this thirst for knowledge. Tell me, what that is like for you as it relates to, like, you and your boys, you know, looking at just this life education.
So my boys, I'm blessed to be, I mostly consult for a living, but I'm blessed to be able to be at home and be a stay-at-home mom, and that is something that a lot of women don't get a chance to do. Some people don't really want to do it, honestly, let's be honest. But, I mean, for those women that do it, it's a unique opportunity to shape, future boys and, you know, men and women, essentially. So, you know, when I'm at home with my children, I mean, they go to school now, and I have a seven-month-old boy, but so all boys. But I spend a lot of time talking to my children, you know, finding out how they're feeling, and I mimic what my dad did. I mean, I tell them that they can tell me anything, and my father told me the same thing. You can tell me anything. It's a lot of things I share with him that most little girls would never share with their father, you know. But I had that opportunity, and I want to mimic that same kind of trust with my boy, so that nothing is too bad to tell mommy, because I want them to come to me or their daddy before they go out into the world and ask some random kid, you know, somebody who don't know any better. But it's sort of that's allowed me to really, like I said, mimic how I grew up, and you know, like I said, my oldest son in particular is very inquisitive, and I think a lot of who you are is innate. Like, you know, I think you kind of born with a certain sort of temperament, and then your environment shapes it. So he's naturally inquisitive. He's been quizzing me since he was like 11 months old, like talking back. But anyway, but now he's older, and like, for example, this summer they're doing summer camp, and he chose a robotic camp, and also he's doing fishing, which, you know, in my mind, coming from the city and growing up in Chicago, like that's random to pick that, but he chose that. And so, you know, I think that's important. If you can, is to provide your kids with different opportunities to do different things, because you never know what's going to catch their attention, you know. So, again, this goes back to what I was saying about not limiting kids or anybody from reaching their full potential, because you planting that seed of curiosity, who knows where that's going to go, so.
Yes, I love that. So let's talk about your seeds of curiosity, because you studied psychology undergrad.
Right.
And then you went on to get a master's in community social psychology.
Right.
And now you're doing work in nonprofit. So I'm just curious about that educational and career path that you took.
Right.
Maybe tell us a little bit about how you started, why you chose that major, and then we'll progress from there.
Yeah. So this is going back to high school. You know, we had our core classes we had to take, and then we had electives. And I chose psychology, and I forget my teacher's name was Miss Burke. But I was, you know, I took the class, I think, just awesome, just let me just see what this is about. And I remember us watching a movie called Sybil, which is about a woman who had multiple personalities. So we kind of like saw things that were kind of just like, wow, I wonder why this woman is this way. Like, what is it about her? So I think I already had this natural curiosity about people's behavior. But I think when I took that class, I was like, aha, like, this is what I want to do because, you know, I don't think that you can necessarily predict somebody's behavior, but I'm just fascinated with the reason why people do certain things. You know, human behavior is fascinating to me. So when I took that class in high school, I was like, yeah, this is what I'm going to go to school for. And so when I went to Michigan State, that's what I ended up doing. And I was never bored in my classes. I mean, I was constantly like, oh, this is exciting, and, you know, reading about this. And, you know, we had all kind of cool projects and watching all kind of cool movies. And I think that if I'm just thinking back, you know, when you go, like, you know, Tanisha, when you are in these gifted, quote-unquote gifted programs, like in 7th to 8th grade honors program, they allow you room to learn about a lot of different things. And so I think that because I was exposed so early to sort of interesting classes and different topics, that they just kind of transferred over into, you know, what I did in college. And So I was just fascinated with human behavior. So when I got to grad school, I wanted to just now apply what I learned to real life. And that's how I was introduced to the nonprofit sector. I didn't know it existed before that. I didn't have to put a name to it. And so it kind of fed my desire to want to do some good, you know, too. So my father was a pretty humble, you know, frugal man. And I kind of always had that with me, too, that whole desire to sort of serve the community in whatever way I could. So service was big for me. And so when I went to grad school, I learned about the nonprofit sector. Like I said, I took a class on fundraising. And when I got out, I thought I was going to be a nonprofit executive director. And I thought that was what I was going to do. But then I saw, you know, again, we talk about education, meaning real life education. Now I saw a lot, I worked for a lot of women who, you know, they were nonprofit executive directors, but they were stressed out. Like, they were at work all day and freaking out. And I was like, you know what? It is not this serious. I need to find another way that I can be useful where I'm not consumed with an issue. And so I thought back to my fundraising class, and I said, oh, you know, let me see if I can do this. Let's see if I can grant write. So an opportunity came up, and I learned how to fundraise on the job. So it was also, it kind of seemed like it was like an idea I had about things, and then I said, oh, let me pursue it, and then it happened. And that's kind of how my life has been. It's like, oh, I wondered about this. Okay, let's try it. And so the opportunity to do these different things, there was always a door open waiting for me to walk through it in each point of my life if I look back and think about how things happen. So that's what I think happened.
So this is a great example of how you really need to pay attention to what you pay attention to. So just the fact that, you know, you saw this movie and it really intrigued you and got you interested in human behavior. Right. And then, so now let's talk about this journey of when you got the idea about fundraising and then you just made it happen. Because for a lot of people, it's understanding, like, how you get from idea to creation to manifestation. Like, what does that journey look like? So if you could pinpoint what it was that maybe sparked that idea, sometimes ideas come out of frustration. Sometimes they come out of just a strong desire. Mm-hmm. Where did that idea come from? Was it really from looking at people who were stressed out and just trying to find another way, or where did it come from?
And I think it was two things. I like to write. Like I said, when I was younger, my father, you know, read a lot, so I was always reading books. Like, just, you know, in my spare time, I was just reading, you know, pouring through books and really reading books. And then I think from there I developed like a love for the written word. And so, you know, I dabbled in poetry for a little bit, which is, you know, that was fun and creative, and, you know, that was like a little outlet for me. And so, it was my love of writing matched with my idea on how I can be useful in the nonprofit sector. So like I said, when I saw these women struggling, they were mostly struggling about money. So, you know, and I thought that, you know, if I'm going to be in this industry, be in this sector for a while, I need to be in a position where I'm constantly able to help. I mean, it's one thing to provide services to folks. It's another thing to bring the money in so these services can even exist. And so I just kind of thought, you know, how can I use my love of writing with my desire to make sure folks can get paid and programs can go on. So it was honestly that, and I volunteered for a little bit before I was really pursuing a position in fundraising, and I did a little bit of work. So you know, this sort of curiosity you know, it manifested itself in actual opportunities to do it. And then when I, like I said, when I finally found a job that taught me how to do it and I got paid for it, it was just like, wow, that's pretty cool, you know. But it was a desire to be useful and also, you know, match up with my love of writing. That's kind of how I look at it.
Did you feel like there was any risk involved with making this transition?
Yeah, no, I didn't. I was already doing, you know, I was already doing work, doing program work. So I didn't think it was a risk in doing so. At the time, you know, I was married and stuff, and so it wasn't like I was necessarily, like I had to get a job. And I had a job all that, you know, I've always had jobs, but it was just kind of like, it was like the next step, the next level. So it wasn't just, you know, stay flat, you know, and continue to do program services. It was like, okay, now what can I do? And I think that, like I mentioned earlier, that is indicative of me being in all those gifted programs. I mean, it was never like, okay, you know how to do, you know, you know how to add. Okay, now let's learn how to do geometry. Okay, now let's learn how to do calculus. It's always like this next level. So it made sense to me that I would do something different as an adult, you know, at least in my career. So
what was the journey like to become a freelancer?
Yeah. And that journey is it was a long one, like looking back on it. So the first time I decided to step out and just be a freelancer, I was married to my husband at the time, and I gave birth to my second son. That's what it was. And so, you know, I was just kind of tired. And another thing about me is that I was kind of tired of the rat race. Like, I was going to work every single day, and this kind of presented itself as an opportunity. You know, now I have a baby, so this is a good opportunity for me to stay at home for a year, you know. So my husband is an entrepreneur, and he was like, yeah, sure, go ahead and do it, see if you can freelance. You just stay at home. So I put an ad out on Craigslist and met my first client, who I'm with to this day. And again, he gave me the opportunity, my client, meaning he gave me the opportunity to really, really show that I can be useful as a consultant, because he allowed me to help him, you know, relearn how to fundraise and bring in some different money. And that boosted my confidence. So I was like, oh, okay, I can do this as a freelancer. Because it's scary. It's scary doing stuff as a consultant, because you don't know. There's no security. But I think I kind of thrive off of that. I think if I'm to be honest with myself, I like that challenge of that hustle. It's a hustle. I love hustling. You know, this is natural. I love it. So I did that for a year. And then went back to work after that, but that gave me some confidence to know that I could do it. And then when I was back at work, like word spread, you know, so he would contact me for work, and then somebody I knew was like, oh, this person needs help, can you help them? So now people start talking. Everybody starts talking. Oh, blah, oh, you have a friend, right? Oh, okay, here's somebody that might need your help. You know, so it kind of took on a life of its own. And I know that was all on purpose. Now looking back, it was all on purpose, because it was when I finally decided to do it for real, like I have clients already. I have people already waiting. So anyway, so long story short, so when I finally decided to do it the second time, I was divorced. I mean, I remarried my husband again, but this is the same guy. So my husband, I can see my husband, but just to get clear, we got divorced in 2008 and got remarried a few months back, and now we're back together. But we got divorced, and you know, I was working a regular, like I said, quote unquote regular job, 9 to 5, getting up every day, driving an hour and a half to DC, and I was not happy. And it came to a point where I had this job with making all this money, and I still was like, this is lame. Like, I just don't. I'm miserable. And this is when, Tanisha, if you can remember, we reconnected, and I remember talking to you and being like, I don't know what's going on. I was having dreams about this. I was having dreams where, like, I was, you know, where I left my job and I was doing it on my own. But I was afraid. And I was, but it was nagging me. It was something in the back of my mind that was like, something ain't right. You need to, you know, I was like for example, I would sit at work and be staring out the window, like, wow, you know, what's everybody else doing? Well, I'm at work in this little box. What's everybody else out there doing? You know, so I used to have dreams about it. And then we talked. And I remember telling you how miserable I was. And I'll never forget, you said, there's this book called The Dream Giver by Bruce Wilkinson. And I went and bought that book, I think the same day. There was a bookstore around the corner from my job. Went there, bought that book, opened that book up, and it was just like, it was my life. You know what I'm saying? I was like, wow. And for those who don't know what that book is about, it's about this, it's a parable. It's about this guy named Ordinary. Ordinary gets up every day. He has the same breakfast. He goes to the same job. He eats the same lunch. He comes home, watches TV, and that's it. And it's the same thing every single day. And then one day he gets this, it's represented as a feather in the book, but he gets this sort of inkling from God to say, you know, there's something else I need you to be doing. So when I read that book, I walked and I was working in DuPont Circle in D.C., and I took a walk and read the book and sat down on the bench and cried because it was like, dang, like this is crazy, you know. And I don't, I tend to sort of shun coincidences like that, but it was really sort of speaking to me. And it was like at that moment, when I look back and look at all how everything was aligned, I said, yeah, I need to do this. And I finally did it, and it was the greatest thing I've ever done, I think, besides, you know, having my boys and stuff. So it was a great thing.
Mm-hmm. Hey, Mariah, you have such a journey of courage and I want to say risk-taking.
Yeah.
But as I listen to you, you said purpose before, you know, it was one mm-hmm. purpose, and now you just said things were aligned. And I'm wondering, what does that mean to you to be on purpose? And is that something that is accessible for everybody to have a life that's so on purpose like yours?
Yeah, I think everybody's life is, and I think everybody has a purpose, period. I mean, I think, and you know this, like, I believe in God, and it's not like, oh, I believe in God just to be something I just say. Like, I really honestly think that, you know, when you align your life with his laws and statutes, then things come into place. Like I said, when I finally quit my job, like, my eighth husband, who was my husband, was in the room with me. Like, he came over for whatever reason, and I was on the phone, and I just quit my job. And he was standing next to me. Like, he stood next to me years before that when I left my job and was like, yeah, you can do it. Just go ahead and do it. I got your back. And we weren't even married then, you know. So, like, that was on purpose, that he was there at that moment. And then, you know, after that, we still weren't together. So, you know, time went on, and I struggled. I mean, I'm not going to act like I quit my job and everything was gravy, but it really took... Like, I learned how to submit at that point. I learned how to submit to God and to really understand that he's in control of everything. You know, and that proved it to me because, you know, I was like, man, you know, I quit my job and everybody was looking at me like, you did what? Like, you know, I didn't really, nobody was like, yeah, good job. Everybody was like, what? You quit your job. Mm. I did that, and I think that like I said, I learned how to surrender, and I think when I surrendered, that allowed me to be more relaxed. If that makes any sense, so I surrendered to the way that it was going to be, and I never starved during that time period. I mean, I can say it was about 7 months when I was just like broke. You know what I'm saying? Like, I had people around me supporting me, helping me, and stuff, but like, I was broke. I wasn't bringing any income, and that was a huge blow to my ego because I just knew, like, you know, I hadn't went to school. I was got a master's degree. I'm this, I'm that. No, I learned at that moment that don't nothing happen unless God make it happen. And so when I did that, like I said, it humbled me in a way that nourished my spirit at the same time. So, you know, I think everybody need to go through an experience where they are truly humble to really even live their life to the fullest. You know what I'm saying? Because we get so wrapped up on me. No, you need to... you know, do what you can, but just understand that it's bigger than you. You know, you're a daughter, you're a wife, you're a mother. You have all these different roles. It's not about serving yourself. It's about serving, like I mentioned earlier, serving your community and serving the world. So so when that happened, it shifted my focus, and, you know, I finally got some clients, and I, you know, was able to sustain myself. But then in the midst of all of that, and my family came back together. I mean, my husband and I got back together. We had another child. My sons were back in the same house. We all were in the same house. And so, you know, not only did it humble me, but it just showed me that through surrender, your life can be rebuilt all over again into the way that's really, really useful. So now, like I said, I'm a stay-at-home mom. Like, I work, still work, and I do my blog and all of that. But my focus is more on how I can be of service. And so I think if I look over my life and I think about how I can be most useful, this was the answer. I had to come to this point to realize that, no, this is what you should be doing. This is how you serve.
Tamar, I think it's interesting that you said it was a 7-month journey because seven
is that crazy? I totally understand
number.
That. Yeah, exactly.
In the whole spiritual sense, seven is significant. And so I'm wondering, when somebody is on this journey of being humbled, and you said things don't happen unless the Creator has a part in it. So in that surrendering process, what was your role? What did you have to do?
I think I had to stop being so arrogant. I mean, that's just kind of like the way I look at it. When I say I was humble, like I was humble. Like, you know, I had to stop saying, because I think I remember when I was, like right before I quit my last job, I was at another place and, you know, I was negotiating with this new job, and I was like, well, this is how much I make. And then they came back to me and was like, well, we can match what you're making now. And I was like, what? No. You need to give me X, Y, Z. And I kind of had this sense of entitlement. Like, you know, I've done what I thought was my work, and so now I need you to compensate me fairly. But what I learned, like I said, what I learned was that still made me happy. Like, I still wasn't, like, happy. You know what I'm saying? I made this money, but so, like, I don't get a chance to see my boys that often. I'm not, like, you know, really dealing with them like I want to deal with them. I'm not able to, you know, sit and be still because I was in a rat race. I was getting up early, like I said, down an hour and a half to work. My back started hurting. So, I didn't, you know, my health kind of, it didn't deteriorate, but I started having, you know, all kind of creaks and stuff, you know. And I was like, what is going on? I learned some true humility, and it came from not being so arrogant, not thinking that the world owed me something. I owe the world, essentially. The world was here before I got here. It's going to be here after I die. Like, it's not about you. So, and I think that the world, and this is a whole other conversation, but I think the world is out of order now because mankind thinks that somebody owed them something. And I think once we, you know, sort of wash our brains to sort of really, really put things into perspective, then, you know, we'll learn that we're supposed to serve, but then also in serving, you're fulfilled. So now I'm fulfilled now. Now I'm at ease. Now I know what peace looks like. Now I know what being content is. I didn't even know what that was. Now I know what being content is. I get it. I've been poor. I was fine. You know what I'm saying? I'm fine now. I got a little bit more money, but I'm fine still. You know, I've been on the path towards finding that peace, and I think that I'm on it, and I'm happy. I'm grateful that I was able to, you know, live. I'll be 35 next month, so I'm grateful to, you know, almost be 35, and I also kind of figure out a little bit what being content means. So.
I love that, Tamar. And so in this journey of really releasing that ego, that arrogance, or the negative ego, and being content, you know, it took a risk to, I mean, you said you found your first client on Craigslist. Wow. You know, that's very, for a lot of people, that's a bold move. It's like I'm putting myself out there, right? Mm-hmm. How did you go about building the brand of Tamar and Funtime? Mm-hmm. You know, was that a separate journey, or did it just come easily to you?
Well, I think that came easily to me. I actually did my blog maybe a month after I quit my job, and I was like, oh, you know, because again, being I felt like I like to write, so I was like, oh, it would be cool if I had a blog, and I was like, okay, well, let me call it. And I was brainstorming with my friend, and I was like, oh, I should call it this, but that domain name was already taken, so I was like, oh, let me try fun times, and I like to. Most people who know me know that I'm kind of like a joker. Like I like puns. Like I like dry humor. You know, so I was like, okay, well, let me do this. And it was for two reasons. I mean, it's obviously it's a marketing thing, and that's what I serve. That's its purpose. But it's also I have it up there as a way to keep folks from making the same mistakes I did. And you can't. That's not really kind of like a naive notion, but I do think that, you know, if I can at least tell folks, you know, be careful about this, be careful about that, then they can be more focused on their purpose. So when you're fundraising, a lot of times people who fundraise, they do multiple things in their jobs. The nonprofit sector, everybody's doing 5 things at once. So if I can sort of have a blog out there that, you know, warns people of certain things and reminds them of what they should, you know, be about and all that, then I feel like they can focus their energy on what they need to be about, which is serving communities, raising money, and all of that. And so, it, you know, I put a lot of stories on there. Their personal experiences, things that I either seen or been through, and they allow me to sort of release that because those are all, it's in my mind. So it's good for me to sort of get what's in my mind often on paper and in a way that's useful, but also just to be creative. I mean, I like to have a conversation with folks, and I like to talk. I mean, I think that my blog is, if you didn't know me, I would hope that people would read my blog and get an idea of my personality. So, the business world is kind of like if you look at my website, and my website is Tamar Cloyd Consults.weebly.com. But if you look on my website, there I have a picture that my friends took of me when I was doing my quote-unquote professional pictures, but I don't have on like a three-piece suit. Because that's not me. And so I look at my blog so I just look at my blog as an extension of that. Like, I'll be professional. I'll wear a suit when we first meet, but just know that I'm not all about my education, what degrees I got. I really am. This is Tamar. So, and I think my name is unique enough to brand itself. Tamar Cloyd is a pretty unique name. So, but I want people to know that I'm a regular person and we can have a conversation that's relaxed enough that, I can help you, and you can trust me. So it's sort of a way to sort of get people to know my personality online, if that's possible. So.
And I think it's very possible. I subscribe to your blog, and when I read the content, it's not only very well thought out and very well written, but it does give a sense of who you are, so that if I am a potential client and I sit down with you, I kind of have an idea of what angle you're coming from.
Right.
Yeah, you're definitely putting yourself out there in a very authentic way, which is good and it's very welcoming for people. So if, in this whole spirit of transparency and letting people really see who you are, Tamar, I'm wondering, what is one thing that you really, really wish people knew about you?
That I doubt myself all the time. I'm self-conscious. I guess that's something I think that people – I don't think people know about me. I'm very subconscious. I'm very like, what are they thinking? What am I saying? Is it okay? Are you okay? Like, I have this conversation in my mouth all the time. And I think that that's most of us. I think we are, if we're honestly with ourselves, we don't really, we have a hard time sort of accepting ourselves. And so, like Felicia, you said you looked at, you saw me in high school and was like, oh, she's so bold, but I don't think that at all. Like, I think that I think I do my best, and my curiosity leads me, as opposed to, like, and I don't mean to swear on your show, but I had a practicum teacher in grad school who she told me two things. She said, fake it till you make it, because she kind of knew that I was kind of had these issues with confidence. And she said that she would talk down what she called her shitty committee. So it would be this committee of people in her head being like, you can't do that. No, don't do that. And she used to have to, like, just tell her to be quiet, So I think everybody has that committee in their mind that sort of tells them, oh, you can't do it. What is something else going to say? But, they might say something. People going to talk if you do it or you don't do it. I mean, so let's just be honest. Mm-hmm. People just talk just to talk. So but you have to be led by something, curiosity, a desire for something better, whatever it is, have that lead you. And I think that, like I said, as long as nothing is harmful to other people, I don't think you can go wrong.
And on that note, I'm wondering, what is most sacred to you? What is that thing that helps you to quiet down the shitty committee and helps you to, to stay focused and moving forward?
Right.
What is that?
I think I'm passionate. I think that when I take my last breath, when my time comes to an end, I want to look back on my life and say, I lived it. You know what I'm saying? I didn't think something to death to the point where I didn't do it. Some stuff you should be careful about and thinking about. But I want to feel like I want to have those regrets. Like I mentioned earlier, I know a lot of older people who say, oh, I wish I would have done this, and it's just like, why? You know what I'm saying? Like, but, you know, why waste your precious breath and time? Shoulda, woulda, coulda. You know what I'm saying? Like, that's depressing. And I don't want to do that. I don't want to look back and see that. And I want my boys to see that. Like I said, my husband's an entrepreneur, and a lot of stuff I learned from him. I mean, he was, you know, he pretty much left college in his last semester to come back to Maryland and start his own company. I mean, you know what I'm saying? That kind of stuff is like, wow, you know. So I have people around me who embody like a spirit of just of faith, you know, whatever it is. You know, so I think that's it.
You know, you remind me of Michael Ellsberg. I'm reading his book right now called The Education of Millionaires, and they talk about what you need to do, you know what I mean, to really be successful in the non-typical way. And as I listen to you, you really embody every single thing they talk about in that book, something I recommend. And so I'm wondering if you could share with people who are listening, Tamar, what are some things that you want to be remembered by? So as you take this life and you just truly live it, you know, how are people going to remember Tamar Chloe?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I think I would want people to know that first of all, that I did my best. So I want to be remembered as, you know, supportive wife, as, you know, to my sons. I want to be remembered as somebody, as a mother who took her time with them and that really put them, you know, put them first as much as possible. You know, the people who know me in a friendly way to know that I try to always keep laughter coming. So I like to, you know, like I said earlier, I like to crack jokes all the time. I mean, you have to have time to laugh. I mean, that laughter alone calms your spirit. So, you know, just somebody who is always trying to, you know, make light of situations, no matter what it is. I mean, because, you know, life is not great. I mean, it's you can make it great, but things still happen. You don't really have any control of, like I said, people dying around you or you getting sick. You know, anything can happen, but I think your mind and how you accept it is what makes it great. So if you take a challenge and you know, like for example, I had diabetes. And I've had diabetes since I was 14 years old. I could have had that. That could have been like, oh, I'm going to die, you know, but I've been blessed. I had 3 healthy sons, and, you know, I'm still pushing and relatively healthy and stuff. So I think that if you have that mind frame, then no matter what happens, you're going to just keep going because you don't have a choice. You can't stop. There's no stopping. You don't stop until God takes your breath, bottom line. You keep on pushing forward. Do what you can do. Love as much as possible because, like I said, we don't have all day. And even if we do live to our 90s or whatever, we still don't want any regrets. So you have to kind of have that mindset of acceptance and then using whatever you can and using experiences to sort of lift you up even more. So.
Such profound insight. What puts a smile on your face, Tamar? What is it that always makes you smile, no matter what?
My boys. I mean, they and I think it's funny. I think it's funny because, you know, like I said, I mainly grew up around my brother and then my dad and my grandma and stuff like that. But I have this affinity towards boys. I don't know what it is about men's humor, but they are just like they don't care. Like I think they just, you know, anything's a joke for them. They're free. They're kind of free spirited. So I think that when I look at my boys and watch them talking and watch them playing, like they just crack me up. I think, and I found myself feeling like a kid again. You know, they remind me that it's okay to be an adult and like acting goofy. You know, running around the house. Ah! So they keep me laughing. You know, as well. And then, you know, my aunt is, you know, she is like a big sister to me as well, and a mom, but like a big sister almost. So she was, you know, she's always there as well. Like I call her up at work and we'd sit there and talk smack. And so, you know, I have a lot of good people around me. I would say the people around me, they make me smile because, you know, it's good to have that connection, that human connection. And I'm grateful to have a network that has grown since I moved to Maryland for sure, but that I can reach out to and just share some laughs with. So.
Yes, and those are truly gifts in your life. You know, you thrive off of your creativity, and that's very obvious. When are you absolutely most creative? Like when you get into that Tamar zone, when does that happen?
Listen to music. So I have, I mean, a lot of my poems, my first poem I wrote was when my father passed away. I wrote a poem for his memorial service, and that was even before I knew I could write. You know what I'm saying? But so I did that. But I, you know, over the years when I would want to write something, it would be music would sort of be the background to whatever I wrote. Like I said, I listened to a lot of different songs, and you know, like I said earlier, when I used to read books a lot, that taught me that I like the way words are formed and the way they're crafted. And I think music is the same way. I mean, music is a story. You know what I'm saying? Like a little quick stories, and so that kind of gets me my thoughts, you know, going and things like that. But, you know, like when it comes to my blog, a lot of ideas, especially from the past, in the first year, a lot of those ideas were just like experiences I had gone through, things that I witnessed. And then now I'll read a story or something online, you know, any kind of lessons or any kind of ideas, and it'll be a joining of both that story and my own personality, like what I thought about it, you know. So a lot of it is just, I don't know, it's kind of hard to explain, but I would say words, if I thought about it, you know, either in a song or written down, they spark ideas in me. Because there's a thought that came out of somebody's head and they wrote it down in the form of an article, or there was a thought in somebody's mind and they wrote it down in the form of a song. And so now I'm kind of building off that kind of a mental spirit, and it's encouraged me to write something, so if that makes any sense. But that's kind of how I look at it.
Yeah, that makes total sense. Why don't you share with us, give us three songs that are on your playlist right now.
Oh, Lord, okay. you know what? So check this out. So I've always liked artists that were not well-known, so there's a song. Well, first of all, there's this artist. Her name is Michelle. So her last first name is Mishal. Her last name is Moore, Moore. And this sister is so bad. She has a song out called Wolf. And so that's my playlist. And that song, well, I'll just say go just Google her. And she has a whole thing online. But that song is basically about how she's a warrior. So there's like, you know, she's singing, and then she has this guy in the background sort of echoing her voice, and she's like, and of course she's growling, so it's like, ow, you know what I'm saying? So it's like this whole, okay, I love it. So anyways, that song is on my playlist. And then there's another song by this artist named Kia Victoria, and she is from, I think she's from Maryland, but she has a song out called Sunlight. So that's another nice song I like. And then I don't know if I have a third one. I mean, I kind of been listening to both of those women real hard lately. But I like a lot of different artists and look forward to new music coming out. So you won't catch me listening to the radio. I mean, unless it's the Christian radio station. But you don't catch me listening to, like, mainstream radio because it just gets on my nerves. I like artists that are intentional about what they say. So.
Yes, and that makes sense coming from a woman who just has this passion for warriors. I love that about you.
Yeah.
And so in addition to shaving your or cutting all your hair off, which, you know, I'm no stranger to that. I love that rocket. What would you say makes you absolutely most unique?
That's a good question. I don't know. I think my curiosity. I mean, I think my desire to learn. I mean, I think that's not saying that, you know, most people don't want to learn, but I think that you know, somebody, like, if I asked you, you know, why is this, and you said that's just the way it is, like, that's not sufficient for me. Like, I want to know why it is, and I think that my curiosity and desire to learn more opens up doors for me, and I feed off of that. So it's like this constant evolution that's happening. And I think I take from that. So, you know, like, and the way I dress and all that, I think about the way I dress is just me sort of paying homage to those things that just interest me. You know what I'm saying? So I'm not going to, you know, whatever kind of catches my attention, I'm going to mimic that and sort of embrace that. So I think it's my curiosity of being like, oh, that's interesting. Oh, she looks interesting with that haircut. Oh, she looks interesting with those glasses on. That's pretty cool. Let me, you know, so it's just me being very, I think being observant about what's going on around me and being attracted to those things that are not common. That are kind of unique. I kind of like that, yeah.
And that's exactly how I remember you. Let's fast forward in time. You know, you've lived your amazing life. No regrets. You've taken life by the horns. And there's a biography written about you. What's the name of that biography?
She Did.
Mm.
Yeah, I mean, you know, she, you know, I don't know. That's the first thing that kind of popped into my head is that she did it. You know what I'm saying? Just like that was no... The conversation, like I said, that shitty committee in my head, that happens, but it doesn't limit me from doing stuff. So, yeah, I'm just saying, I just did it. Like, it wasn't a big deal. And like I said, people talk crazy all the time, but I still do it.
Mm-hmm. And you do it afraid. You do it without fear.
Exactly.
You do it with total confidence. I completely commend you for that. Mm-hmm. And so tell people, now you share with us your website. Let's get both of those websites again because I want to make sure people know how to find you.
Yep. So my blog is Fun Times. So it's FUNDTIMES.wordpress.com. And you can go on there and subscribe in the box to your right. And then there's also my website, which is my name. So it's Tamar, Tamar, Cloyd, Cloyd, Consults, Consults. Weebly.com.
Right, and we're also going to put a link to those sites on our website, the Make It Great Show website. And so who needs to reach out to you? You know, who is your ideal client?
Yeah, my ideal client is somebody who is either new in a leadership position or looking to change the way they fundraise. So a lot of people I work with, they – We're at a transition point. They were just, you know, either new to the game and they were kind of like, you know, pushed to sort of fundraise. So either for that person or somebody who perhaps has been in a leadership position for a while and they're just thinking of changing it up. Maybe they want to reach out to younger donors, for example. Maybe they want to encourage their board to be more creative in how they give. Or maybe they want to, you know, have an event that's not a traditional gala. Maybe they want to do something different. But that's the kind of people that I think are drawn to me and that whom I'm drawn to as well. Just kind of, they kind of want to think out the box when it comes to fundraising because, you know, the traditional ways, they still work, but then we have a whole crop of people coming up now who they don't do things like our parents did. They are online and they're, you know, they want to see things change in a different way. So I would say those people.
Very well said. So definitely when you all want different, when you want innovative, and you want quality, you want to reach out to Tamar Cloy. I really enjoyed talking with you today, Tamar.
And I appreciate
you being so open.
Yeah,
just showing us how you make it great. Thank you so much. And is there any, how about, not is there, I know there are. I want you to give our listeners just a takeaway about how they can make it great in their life. You have to give just a one-sentence inspiration. What would you say?
I would say to them that stop thinking. If you have an idea, consider it. Put it into action and then see what happens. So don't be afraid to take the first step. You never know what's going to happen.
I love that. Thank you, Tamar.
Thank you
so much for listening to the Make It Great Show. Go ahead and take that first step. Take action and do it afraid.
I am great. Not because someone told me, but because I believe. I believe in my abilities to achieve the impossible. I am strong beyond measure. I am smart without a doubt. High I will aim. Shout loudly I proclaim that I am great. I am great from my inner core. Deeply I believe that no obstacle is too large, too much to overcome. I am a conqueror. Opposition I will slay. For this is the day I say that I am great. I am great. I know who I am. I stand tall and erect. Nothing intimidates me. From the moment I begin, I win. I am defined by greatness and nothing less. My only option is success. Action proves it best. that I am great.